This podcast is a publication of the Engineering Management Institute, where we are committed to building professional development systems, including project management and people leadership programs that support the growth of engineers and their firms. Download our AE Industry Trends Report for insights on the Great Resignation, remote work productivity, and people-centric cultures. To get your copy, visit engineeringmanagementinstitute.org.
To be a successful professional in the architecture, engineering, and construction industry, you need to create your own career path sometimes in your career. And that's exactly what our guest today did in her career. Dina Prastos is the founder and CEO of Indigo River. She built an expertise in waterfront architecture, and she has education both as an architect and a civil engineer, which has given her tremendous flexibility, which she talks about in the episode today. So we're going to dive in with Dina. This episode is loaded with amazing career wisdom on how you can build an awesome career in the AEC industry. But first, a word from our sponsor.
Before we dive in, we'd like to recognize our sponsor for this episode, PPI, a leader in engineering exam prep for the FE and PE exams. PPI provides expert prep courses and study resources designed to help you pass the FE and PE exams the first time. PPI's live online courses include hours of lectures, problem-solving demonstrations, exam strategy sessions, office hours, and a passing guarantee. Check out PPI today at ppi2pass.com to see all the options available for FE and PE exam prep. Now let's dive into today's episode. All right, now I'd like to welcome our guest on to the show for today. Dina Prastos is founder and CEO of Indigo River. She's a licensed architect. She's an entrepreneur and really, I think, a very interesting professional based on everything she's done. And I'm really looking forward to talking to her. Dina, welcome to the Civil Engineering Podcast.
Thank you for having me.
So let's just start off, you know, big picture. Tell us a little bit about kind of your journey in the AEC field and really kind of maybe you can get into, you know, what led you to specialize in waterfront architecture, which is your specialty?
Absolutely. I studied architecture undergrad. And when I finished, I had a self-awareness around me and also a self-awareness around what was going on in the economy. And it was around the 2007, 2008 kind of downturn. And typically when the economy seizes up, architects are one of the professions that's directly impacted and the work kind of dries up, at least temporarily. And so knowing that kind of hedged my bets and also kind of the self-awareness around my technical abilities coming out of architecture school, I decided to go back to school and get a master's in civil engineering. And I did that and I finished the program and I finished well, and I had a new confidence kind of in the technical abilities of, you know, completing calculations on a notepad in a classroom or in an office. But I, again, was kind of reminded of vulnerabilities or opportunities for improvement. And I felt that I didn't have a practical enough understanding of how things are built, who's building them, what the conversations are, why select one material over another, what the impacts of those decisions are as designers. And so I elected to go into the field and work for a contractor. I worked for a heavy self-performed civil contractor. And by chance, the first project that I was put on as a field engineer and then project engineer, spent a couple of years, was a Staten Island ferry terminal. And so I got a very early introduction into waterfront by chance. And being on that project for a couple of years, there are some nuanced areas of working on the waterfront that, frankly, through my education, I hadn't realized was an area to specialize in. And so I embraced that and I stayed with the company for about 6 years working on, you know, other projects and also rotating through different departments within that company. And there were, you know, 300 person family owned company that was expanding internationally. And so I had the opportunity as well to work internationally and to understand how the different departments work together. And I finished there and decided to go into the design engineering realm. I had worked on, you know, design builds, but on the contractor side, I had liaised with the designers, but I hadn't really formed the empathy as a designer professional yet. And so I ended up working for a marine engineering firm, kind of leveraging that early experience working on waterfront and got exposure into a whole bunch more waterfront projects, ferry landings, port projects, bulkheads, marinas. And it really kind of opened up my eyes into, yes, waterfront is specialized. It is a niche, different ways in which to leverage that specialty. And so I did that for, you know, a couple of years, and then my roots are in architecture. I did want to, you know, I did all of this to become a better designer, become a better architect early on. And so I did go back into architecture practice and was able to get my license, and really saw the opportunity that when I was, you know, working with engineers, working with contractors in this specialty, I rarely was coming across other architects. And that to me was an opportunity, that the conversations that were being had, there was an opportunity for an architect to assert an agency in a different way than typically done on buildings. And so my career has focused predominantly on waterfront infrastructure.
That's great. Really interesting. And I really like the way that you built your career, in that you have the education in architecture, and then you saw opportunities, you went back, you got the master's in civil engineering. Like you said, I mean, you know, hedging your bets, or kind of like de-risking your career in that, you know, you've increased your knowledge and you've given yourself more potential opportunities and more areas you can engage in. And, you know, I try to tell AEC professionals all the time, if they're looking for career advice, is that you really want to build like good flexibility into your career, right? And have that ability to flex when you need to. And I think your point about understanding that when there's a downturn in the economy, which, I mean, happens, that's how the economy works, right? There's ups and downs. You want to be prepared for that downturn in your career, and the skills that you build and the relationships that you build, you know, can help you to kind of make it through some of those rougher patches, so to speak, in your industry. So that's awesome. And I also know, just from kind of reading about you, that you also, your roots are in Alaska, being that you grew up in Alaska. So can you talk about that a little bit in terms of like the environment, how that may have impacted a little bit of your decision making and, you know, getting involved in waterfront? And
yes, so I grew up in Anchorage, Alaska, and in terms of, you know, weather extremes and in harsh environments, it is one of the harshest, certainly in the country, if not in the world. And so kind of a innate appreciation for man-made infrastructure in some of these extreme environments was kind of born into me. And seeing a contrast, you know, growing up in Alaska, which is a relatively young state, relatively young cities, and then comparing it to the Northeast, a city like New York, or even Europe, going and seeing, you know, buildings, whether they're hundreds of years old or thousands of years old, and infrastructure, and how the communities have kind of organically grown along their waterfronts. I think for me, having a departure point of often, you know, virgin untouched land, and seeing how newer construction and newer engineering principles apply, and then also seeing that contrasted with historical and kind of antiquity based engineering and infrastructure, and from the, you know, simple common sense approaches of, you know, before there was specialty equipment, how things were done, to now with our, you know, latest mixed concretes and different, you know, abilities to access different areas with specialized equipment, and kind of everything in between, kind of having this appreciation from a baseline all the way to the most, you know, specialized equipment today.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think, and this is probably a topic for a whole other episode, but I think growing up in Alaska and now living in New York has got to be a pretty wild, you know, perspective, a couple of different perspectives. I mean, I'm from New York, grew up in New York, and I've been to Alaska, and certainly they're, you know, pretty, you know, very different. But
yeah, but one awesome. Of the things I think that stands out to me, aside from the built environment, certainly individuals' relationships with both the built environment and the natural environment. And that's certainly something that, you know, rooted in me is an appreciation for nature, and maybe in an indirect way also lends itself to why I gravitated towards waterfront. That even in the most urban dense environments, if you can make it to, even if it's a bulkhead, a man-made, you know, vertical condition, on the other side of that vertical is water, and that's nature. And so a way, even in the most dense environments, to reconnect with nature, and to be able to do that in my practice, you know, in the metropolis that is New York City, I don't feel like I'm missing nature necessarily. I'm able to be in touch with it through my work on a daily basis.
Yeah, I think that's a really good and interesting perspective, because I think people do, like, just when you think of a city, they immediately think of like concrete and asphalt and buildings. But, you know, New York City actually has a lot of really great areas for nature, right? Central Park, the High Line. You know, we had some team members in December, and we did like the Circle Line ferry all around and got a really interesting tour. So, you know, so I think that, you know, professionals that are doing things like you're doing are really bringing out the nature in our cities, which I think is important, because that's an important part of living. If you live in a city, it doesn't mean you're going to be shut off to the environment, right? You want to be areas where that accentuate the environment. And I think a lot of people just don't think about that. And hopefully maybe some of the stuff you're doing and other professionals are doing can open them up to that side of cities, which I think is really important.
Absolutely.
All right. So, Dina, as a woman who has achieved success in a field in the AEC industry that has been traditionally male dominated, I mean, we've made some strides. We still have a long way to go. What would you say are some of the challenges that you faced, you know, whether it was just in your career in general, whether it was founding a business and growing a business, you know, as a woman in this field? Can you just share some perspective on that for some of our female listeners that are hoping to really grow in their careers?
Yes, one of the things about growing up in Alaska is that it is largely imbalanced in terms of gender. And there are many more men to women in the state. And even in my family, I have brothers and I grew up with three boys next door. And so I was largely outnumbered for most of my life, not just in my career. So that, you know, maybe helped me get a little bit of a leg up or build some confidence. But even once I entered the corporate world, some things that I'd observe and maybe again, in my nature, the way I was raised, I often would wait, not passively in an irresponsible way, but kind of in a what I thought was a respectful way to be offered things. And that when I performed and my work spoke for itself, then I, you know, get the promotion or get the next opportunity. And that was not the reality that I found. I found other individuals, you know, asserting themselves more, often men, and kind of getting promoted, performance, you know, completely aside, just in terms of that assertive kind of attitude, which carries differently on a woman. And so I learned that kind of very early on that I wasn't going to be recognized solely on performance. And there was unfortunately a political aspect to the game that is the corporate world. And so that's something that, you know, took me observing and maybe at times being a little resentful over before building the skill sets to be assertive for myself and for my career.
Yeah, it's a really good point in that, you know, for those women in the industry, you know, understanding that unfortunately, like you said, Dina, you may not be solely judged on performance, right? And that's a really something you need to, I think, wrap your head around. And I would imagine it requires like a mental toughness, you know, and I can only imagine, obviously, it's hard to put yourself in someone else's shoes like that, but it requires a mental toughness. And, you know, it sounds like your upbringing was able to afford you that. But hopefully for all of the women listeners out there, you know, there are people and interviews and content out there from people like Dina that we've had more and more. We actually started a Women in Engineering podcast to share some stories like Dina's, because I think that can help you build confidence when you see other people that have been as successful, and anything that you could take from their experience can hopefully help to make yours just maybe a little bit easier or give you a little bit more confidence than maybe you would have had if you weren't exposed to their story. So that's one of the reasons we're very appreciative, of course, of Dina coming on the podcast today. So that's great. Thanks for sharing that. All right. So we're going to switch gears a little bit here. We're going to talk a little bit about the Middle East. I think in the U.S., when someone hears the words Middle East, there are certainly can be a lot of negative connotations that come up, fear, if you will. But the Middle East can certainly offer opportunities and, of course, challenges. Now, you've had experiences in the Middle East, particularly in relation to waterfront projects. Can you talk a little bit about the opportunities there for you, how that came about, and whatever you can share with us?
Sure. So kind of tying the last little segment of, you know, growing a confidence to ask for something. I did know early on in my career that I wanted to work internationally, and that was important to me. And that's, you know, appreciating other values in other societies and also understanding how individuals and communities interact with their built environment and how they have done so historically and in different cultures, I think only helps designers in general to understand and to form a type of empathy around that. And so I had raised my hand to join a leadership development program. And again, I raised my hand to work internationally. And so I happened to be rotating in the company and be working on a project in the estimating department at the time that ended up winning. And it was a project in Israel. It was an underground building. And I, because I had estimated on it, it made sense to kind of keep the momentum, build on it and send me over there. And so I did. And I had the themes about, you know, women and male dominated industry is one thing, but kind of male dominated cultures is another. And so I did go over and we grew our team over there. And I started to understand not only, you know, technical aspects of the career, but also kind of cultural aspects of how people work together, language barriers and how powerful our tools are that we do learn, you know, to be able to sketch and draw and not just communicate in written or oral language, but also understanding the importance and impact of team. And especially in an environment where, you know, we had laborers working on the site, that it was in their culture not to look a woman in the eye, not to take orders from a woman. And that's a really hard position to be in as a, you know, managerial position, giving directives and not being looked at or not being heard. And so it kind of put a different emphasis on how the team operated. And so that was a good process to learn through and adapt to. And many kind of larger life lessons have stemmed from my experience there. In terms of waterfront, that was ironically the only project that I was not directly working on the waterfront. It was building an underground building in the desert. But I was representing and working as an agent for the Army Corps of Engineers, which now back stateside and working on the waterfront is one of the major agencies that we work with. As you know, most projects that we touch, there's several permits that go out, and the federal permit is usually administered and regulated by the Army Corps of Engineers. So having an insight into how the agency operates certainly has helped me, you know, now at later stages of my career as well.
That's interesting. And really, you know, what you said there about learning about different cultures and different languages, I think is so important in terms of just personal development. You know, I think sometimes when you live somewhere and you don't really travel that much or get out that much, or at least get out of the country that much, right? In the US, I mean, the US, you could drive forever and you're talking the same language, right? When if you go to Europe, you can drive an hour and there could be a completely different language and a completely different culture. I had that experience when I studied abroad, which I thought was really, really interesting. But just going back to like general project communication, I mean, we talk a lot about this in our project management training programs and even our people leadership programs, is that we have it easy if you're just working on projects within your general geographic location in terms of communication, which people even still struggle with, right? And like you're talking the same language literally. So if you can imagine going to another country and working internationally and dealing with some of the challenges that you just described, I would imagine that that can even help you to become a better communicator, because now you're having to communicate in a not so easy area or, you know, location and atmosphere because it's so different. Would you kind of tend to agree with that?
Absolutely. And that's, I think, one of my larger lessons in life around communication stemmed from that experience of, you know, often we, especially architects, will speak in a language that is not readily understood by our counterparts, whether it's the engineers or the regulators or the public. And so in a role working in another country, when you have to really distill and get to the essence and be blunt about what it is that you're communicating, you can't dress it up. You kind of have to cut through a lot, and that direct style of communication, you know, can be very effective. Not to detract from, you know, how important tone is and body language and other things, but in terms of communicating and understanding, having the empathy of, you know, limited vocabulary, alternate tools, whether it's sketches or body language or other means of communicating, can go very far away as well.
Yeah, no, for sure. I think it's a great learning experience for anyone to get out and travel and try, you know, experience different cultures and languages. So let's talk about starting and building a business. This is something that you did. I think you've had your business for 5 or 6 years or so. You've been very successful with it. It's not an easy thing. I know from my own experience, you know, because you have to now, you have to obviously be really good at your craft, architecture, civil engineering, but then you also have to build a business, which is something completely different in a sense. So for those architects and engineers that might be listening that are aspiring to start or grow their own business, what lessons can you share? What perspective can you give from your experience so far as a founder, someone who's been building a business?
People are everything. Relationships are everything. I am fortunate in that I have a wonderful partner, also mentor, and have been able to work alongside individuals at different points kind of in a career of keeping communication lines open and when opportunity is there to join forces. And so many of our team, we didn't, you know, put out blind calls to hire. We reached out individually with opportunities where they had reached out and we had developed a, you know, previously successful working relationship that we knew it was a good fit. It was tried and tested to some degree. And so we were fortunate in that our growth has occurred organically, but also we've been, you know, thoughtful about it in that we have said no to opportunities that don't fit our mission, don't fit our core values or aren't the right clients for us. And so that's hard to do initially, to be picky in some of those areas. But I think in terms of being selective with who is on our team, we invest heavily in our team members and they are what make us who we are. And so that I think is the kind of the biggest lesson in growing a company is who you're teaming with, what relationships do you have with clients, leveraging relationships that you have with regulators that you've worked with and you've invested in. And so that's certainly something that helps. And then also forming muscles to be agile and flexible and adapt on the fly, because there are no, you know, as much as I try and write out my plan for a day, even it changes out from under me constantly. And so that's just something that having team members, having, you know, solid connections to lean on and support each other kind of both ways goes a long way.
Yeah. I mean, that's great advice. I mean, definitely relationships is kind of the anchor. I think everything we do in our career, especially as business owners, but even just in general as AEC professionals, you know, your relationships, your network is really everything. And I love the idea of really finding great people and investing in them when you're growing a business. And, you know, I think it's helpful to have good processes, of course, in place, but I think you need good people to execute them. And I think investing in your people makes a lot of sense. And, you know, the point you made there at the end, I think is so critical in the AEC field is that you're often dealing with putting out fires every day, right? You don't work in a warehouse where you're on an assembly line and you go through the same steps every day when you show up to work and you just have to try to optimize it or keep the process flowing. We're getting calls from clients. We're getting calls from agencies. Things are happening on our projects. There's delays, there's schedules, there's scopes, there's budgets. And so, yes, you need to have a good plan of attack. You need to upskill yourself wherever you can, but you also need that flexibility and that adaptability, knowing that you can look at your calendar for the week and know that it's not going to end up like what it looks like on Monday. And I think that's a big part of being successful, both as a business owner and as an AEC professional, quite frankly. So definitely some great advice there. So in terms of just getting back to the waterfront for a minute here, you know, obviously we've experienced changes in our climate. It's undeniable. There's been more flooding. There's been more rain. It seems like the 100-year storm is happening every so often these days, not 100 years anymore. So when you think about that, just generally speaking from your experience, how do you kind of envision the future of, you know, waterfront architecture, right? Is there any emerging trends or technologies or things that we should be aware of or just things to think about for those out there that are interested in that part of the industry?
Yes, I am appreciative of the specialty that we are able to focus on because it is so in tune with the environment and it is so in tune with climate change. The waterfront, just as a, you know, geophysical property and typology, is the most vulnerable condition that we have. And so we are dealing with sea level rise and flooding and storm surge and all of these different vulnerabilities that leave us susceptible that require then that we plan and design thoughtfully as to what our investment and what our future looks like and what, you know, the design criteria is, what the design life is, what communities we're serving. We're often working on infrastructure that has a longer design life than a typical building property. And so we begin to think at different scales, and we not only think about the, you know, capital improvement, but also the operations team of who will be maintaining this asset long term. And so we're having a lot of different discussions, and I think our team's background in particular affords itself well to navigating those conversations with different stakeholders. And we have many individuals who have worked, you know, from the planning and development side as either owners or owners reps to certainly all through planning, engineering, architecture, the, you know, the technical pieces, as well as the regulatory pieces and understanding the, you know, different policies and codes that exist or are coming into existence or need to come into existence. I'll come back to that. And all the way through to, you know, construction specialty, you know, waterfront construction is a niche. And, you know, harping back on relationships, understanding that when we have a question with a designer, we will pick up the phone and call a contractor and say, hey, this is a condition I'm looking at. And I, you know, have a couple thoughts, but how would you approach this? How would you build this? Getting those insights early into the design process can change, you know, the trajectory of a project and the success of a project. And so we do lean on our experiences having, you know, been in different seats around the table, as well as understanding the opportunities ahead of us, understanding the shortcomings within our systems, that we have codes that are sometimes, you know, antiquated and they don't take into account current weather patterns, let alone future weather patterns and future weather forecasts and predictions and what some of the implications are, you know, understanding with insurances and different things. It is a dynamic moment in time where there is a lot of change occurring. And so we not only focus on, you know, the technical, the design kind of in an office, but we get into the field often. We focus on other aspects of what we do. And it could be, you know, cost estimating or sequencing or scheduling and logistics of, you know, the projects, whether we design them or someone else design them, but within our bailiwick of waterfront. And we are supporting and writing one of the first waterfront codes in the world, but in New York City, it is the first waterfront code. And so understanding there was a void there in terms of how previously the waterfront structures have been and currently are regulated, and understanding there's an opportunity for a better process and a better code to better serve the community, better serve the public, better protect professionals. And so those are all areas either directly or indirectly related to climate change and the work that we are touching.
That's awesome. And I really, really, you know, love that you're getting involved with writing the code for the waterfront. I think that that's a great thing to do on multiple levels. I mean, one, it's about taking the next step in your career, right? You're not just like conforming to what's out there, but saying, hey, we need to kind of elevate this part of the industry. We need to get a better code. We need to pitch in on that, which I think is great. And obviously, I think from a business building perspective or a career building perspective, it's just a great way to build your expertise, right? Like contributing to codes and contributing to like how your industry is being shaped, which I think sometimes we forget we have the ability to do that. You know, so if you're listening, like you don't just have to follow the rules all the time. You may be able to help set new rules. I mean, you know,
absolutely,
it's something to think about, which is I think pretty important. I want to dive a little bit deeper on projects because your projects, I'm sure, are really dynamic and interesting. Being on the waterfront, you collaborate with a lot of different parties. We talked a little bit about in the Middle East on your projects with communication. Talk to us about your waterfront projects in terms of like communicating and collaborating with all of these different parties involved, the agencies, the Army Corps, the clients, your team members, other consultants. What tips can you share in terms of like project communication for you that have worked on your projects?
So I will maybe first lay the kind of structure of our team and organization of our team, because I think we are unique in how we practice in that we are not all architects or we are not all engineers. We're not all civil engineers. So we have kind of an array of architects, engineers, and planners. And within architecture, we have, you know, traditionally trained building architects, mm-hmm. although most of us have only spent our careers working on infrastructure. We have landscape architects, we have naval architects that focus on floating assets. And then we, you know, within planners, we have certainly planners that work at various scales, as do the architects, but with a real emphasis and focus and background in climate adaptation planning and resiliency planning, disaster relief, managed retreat, recovery, a kind of a unique skill set when paired with some of our other disciplines. And then within engineering, certainly we have civil engineers. And I think one of the things for me kind of early in my career, I didn't understand the evolution of the professions and that, you know, there weren't always as many different disciplines as we have today. And they've emerged organically and out of need and out of opportunity. And so within, you know, I would say, you know, historically, what was civil engineering has branched into, you know, whole other schools and whole other programs, but certainly environmental engineering was born out of civil engineering, structural engineering, coastal engineering, marine engineering. And these are all disciplines that we have that are, you know, subspecialists that certainly, you know, speak the same language, but often have different fortes that they're able to bring to the team. And so when we kind of wrap all of that in together, and not to mention, you know, we have different academic backgrounds and different technical expertise, but we also have different experiences working different points along the way within the AEC community, whether it's as an owner, as an owner's rep, as a contractor. And so again, in terms of speaking the different languages within our team alone, we're speaking a lot of different languages. And so we learn the vocabulary that's necessary to communicate effectively outside of our team as well. And so we're able to speak with regulators and with contractors and with owners and developers and understand what the different motivations are and communicate effectively around them, which I think lends itself well to, you know, having an integrated process along the way and a more efficient process in the end.
That's awesome. And, you know, it just speaks to how exciting this industry is because you just gave so many different opportunities, jobs, roles that are in the industry. And I try to tell younger professionals on our industry all the time that you may be working on a job in this industry in a year from now that didn't exist today. Right? Because of the technology, because of the infrastructure needs and the evolution, which makes it such an exciting career path, which is just exciting in general. But another question that I'll ask around the team, because you mentioned your team a few times, can you talk a little bit about the importance of diversity in your team and how that contributes to the success and kind of the innovation of these waterfront projects, which sounds like they're so dynamic?
Absolutely. That's, I mean, near and dear to our heart. We are a women-owned business. We do partner with many other minority-owned businesses or veteran-owned businesses. And so diversity is kind of fore of mind in our process as well. But I'll kind of make the same point about communication and about empathy, of having different individuals represented in the room and at different points in their career. And we're not so hierarchical that we won't take, you know, open lines of communication from any level about any topic, that we will, you know, brainstorm together, and very democratic in our values. And so we do like to represent, you know, a diverse range of individuals within the company. And we also like to conduct, you know, community engagement, stakeholder engagement, to uncover voices that may not be heard otherwise through the process, and to take those bits of feedback and advantages into our process throughout.
No, it's great. And I think that's the one thing that we really have to think about when it comes to diversity, is you want a lot of perspectives in what you do, because that's going to make your project just better for everybody, right? Because our projects are typically delivered for civilization, for the community. Correct. And the community consists of people from all walks of life, all different Absolutely. Cultures and backgrounds, right? So, you know, if the design team, you know, and the construction team and the owner, and they're all bringing different perspectives to the table, we're kind of going to account for all the different perspectives of the end users of our projects. And that's why I think that diversity, really more than any industry, is so important in our industry. And I think it just from a team building perspective too, you know, being a business owner myself and building a team here at EMI, it makes it a much more enriching atmosphere to work in. Because even going back to what you said about when you went to the Middle East, right, just experiencing people with different backgrounds and different thought patterns and perspectives, it just makes things much more interesting and exciting for, I think, all people involved, right? And it kind of keeps us open-minded. So,
absolutely. And I just want to add on, because you mentioned the, you know, the enriching environment to work in, which is, you know, absolutely important. And, you know, who we work with and who we're interacting with on a daily basis, you know, it shapes our lives, it shapes our experiences, as does the built environments that we are creating. And so having that empathy in the room and representing different individuals from different walks of life and different, you know, members of the public, and hearing their voices and feeding that into the design process was also the opportunity that I saw, particularly to become a waterfront architect, that the engineers, while great at they do, will focus on the guidelines, on the standards, on the health and safety aspects, not necessarily the wellness, the welfare, the experiential qualities that architects are trained to look at, you know, look through that lens. And so when we, you know, work on waterfront infrastructure, it might be a fixed pier to with a gangway down to a floating barge or floating dock or floating ferry landing, and thinking through the range of motion that is experienced for an individual, whether in a wheelchair or the elderly, that doesn't just check the box of, you know, the standard guidelines, begins to be where we feel we can enrich the built environment along the waterfront, of really imagining what that experience is like and optimizing it and tailoring it to different individuals, having them, you know, represented throughout the process, and have it, you know, bleed through in the design and in the end use of how the asset will be experienced.
Yeah, it's very well said, and really encompasses the importance, I think, of diversity, and really in all the types of projects that we do, especially obviously waterfront, with all the different people that you deal with and interact with. All right, so we covered a lot of really great stuff here. We're going to take a very quick break. We're going to come back, and we're going to finish up by putting Dina on the career hot seat. We'll get a couple of quick last answers from her career related, and we'll be back in just a minute. All right, we're back with Dina Prastos, founder and CEO of Indigo River, architect, civil engineer, entrepreneur. She's given us some great information so far today. And Dina, now we're going to put you on what we call our civil engineering career hot seat. You ready?
Absolutely.
All right. Do you have any specific rituals that you practice every day? For example, maybe it's a morning routine or a lunch routine, or just something that you've done consistently on a regular basis that has contributed to your success?
Yes. So I endeavor to get a good night's sleep. And generally that means I'm waking up before my alarm clock. And when I do, I have a couple minutes before I look at my phone just to kind of process what the day holds. And I will get my coffee, have a, you know, kind of slow start on my own in silence, drinking my coffee before I will do something physical. And whether that's yoga or cycling, even if it's 20 minutes or a walk, take the dogs out, something where I am moving before I am ideally in front of a screen. And so that really helps me to kind of ground myself in the day before emails start flying and I, you know, lose track of what's coming up next.
No, I think that's great. I mean, we live in a world where a lot of us and what we do are in front of computers all day. So I think if there's opportunities to reduce that time or start off the day without it can be very powerful for the long term, for sure. So in terms of personal development, has there been a book or an author or an experience, something that like you encountered along the way in your career that stuck with you in terms of like a skill set or a strategy or like I said, an author or book or something that kind of stuck with you along the way?
Yes. And I would recommend for many in the industry to check out Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg, because I read early in my career, maybe 15, 20 years ago when it first came out, and it is a male dominated industry and we do face biases and maybe unintentionally even project biases that I think will only help our industry to course correct, to have an awareness around as more women come up in the industry. And so that is certainly a book that I felt seen when I read, I felt heard when I read, and I was glad to know existed and was able to also take some tips from it for my own career.
Awesome. So Lean In by Sheryl Sandberg. That's great. All right. Next question. When you think back on some of your managers that you've had throughout your career, and if you think of your favorite manager or managers, and you don't have to name names, of course, but what made them your favorite? We're trying to understand, you know, what the really great managers and leaders in the AEC industry do. What are some of their characteristics or traits or actions?
So certainly establishing a basis of trust, a transparency with communication, I think goes a long way in any relationship, but especially in a managerial one.
Yeah, that's big. You want to have that trust factor that you can feel comfortable in talking with your supervisor and back and forth. And I think that can really help for long-term relationships. That's great. All right. The last question that I have for you is, we call it the career elevator advice question. If you got into an elevator with like an up and coming AEC professional and you had maybe 30 to 40 seconds with him or her, what advice would you share with them based on your career experience so far?
So even if you can't see it, don't be afraid to be it or become it. Through school and early in my career, there wasn't a waterfront architect. I didn't know what it was. And it kind of emerged organically through marrying passion and purpose in my work. And so that's something that I think many can benefit from, understanding the profession is agile. It is evolving. It is changing. There may be, an early opportunity to become a specialist within a specialty that didn't previously exist. And that is certainly within our grasp and at our fingertips now within climate change and the different sciences that are coming out and the different technologies that are coming out. And so don't be so rooted in what was done before us that you lose imagination to become something new within the industry and trailblaze for others, whether to follow or lean alongside or branch out from.
Yeah, I mean, that's great. And that's kind of what we spoke to before, is that like there are going to continue to be new opportunities in this industry that aren't even available now. And you need to kind of keep your mind open to them and not think that you have to be, pigeonholed into a certain box or a title that exists today, because, you can maybe create a new profession within the AEC industry in the future. And I'm sure some of you will. Well, Dina, I want to thank you so much for spending some time with us here on the Civil Engineering Podcast. You've given some great, I think, career advice, business building advice, just general, growth and development advice for our listeners. And I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me. It was my pleasure.
I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Dina. I mean, she's done amazing things in her career, and just taking some of her advice and applying it, I think, can really help AEC professionals to build a more well-rounded and successful career. And if you like the interview, consider subscribing to our channel here, because we do put out videos like this on a weekly basis to help engineers become better managers and leaders. I'll see you next week.